Hello, this is Down the Back of the Seats. I'm Ellen, manager of Campbelltown Picture House.
And I'm Alistair, a film and theatre maker based on the Isle of Mull.
And Alistair, what is this podcast about?
Funny you should ask. This podcast explores what happens when public spaces and the public meet. What's left behind? What's been found that's unexpected? What stories are there to tell? It's tales from behind the scenes at the cinema, theatre, concert hall, wherever people meet, linger, and leave things. Or bits.
Yep. Okay, we're going to move swiftly away from the bits to our frequently asked question. This question I was reminded of this week when I received an email from a customer who was asking, why have you got subtitles on Indiana Jones on Wednesday night? So I emailed back and said, because some people like subtitles. And it got me a thinking.
Yes.
Subtitles. Do you watch your content at home with subtitles on?
If it's a language I don't speak, yes.
Well, yes, okay.
But generally speaking.
I mean, sorry, I should have... If it's not in English, Gaelic or French, do you watch... sorry, if it is in English. Wait a minute. Okay.
Yeah, so a bit of Spanish in there as well.
If it's in English, Gaelic or French, then you don't watch it with subtitles on.
Generally speaking. So my father-in-law has vascular dementia and is kind of hard of hearing. So a cheery one for 9 o'clock on a Monday morning.
Keep it light, Austin.
He has difficulty hearing. So if we're watching something with him, we'll generally have the subtitles on. I find subtitles kind of draw my attention to themselves. If it's a language I speak, if it's a language I don't speak, I just see it as part of the overall experience. But I know if it's in French, we watched what is it called? Call My Agent, I think is what it's called in English.
Yeah,
wonderful French series. Absolutely, it's just a bizarre soap serial, really. But we were watching that, and the first couple of series, the subtitles were fantastic, really, really good. So I was reading them whilst listening to the French, and then once it sort of hit America, the subtitles changed, and they were really not saying the same thing as they were saying on screen. It's quite bizarre. Translation and interpretation are vital arts, and there are many skilled people out there doing it, but some people just seem to do things a bit too quickly, and I don't know if that's a Netflix curse or something. I'm not sure.
Well, interesting, because there was a bit of stuff around Squid Game with I was going to ask you whether you watched it with subbed or dubbed, but there were Koreans saying that the series that they were watching was completely different from the series that people who were watching it with subtitles.
Really?
Because so many nuances were missed and just meanings of phrases were just completely gone.
That's the standard process if the person who's the translator on the text, like, you know, say like Ted Hughes or whoever, if they don't speak the original Greek, they would be given a kind of neutral translation that's quite literal, and then you kind of work off the top of that to make your own poetic or, you know, interpretation. Umberto Eco's got a book on this called Mouse or Rat, which is fantastic. Umberto Eco's work was translated by I can't remember the name of the translator, for most of his books it was the same translator, and they were exceptional translations from what I can tell. The play within the language was amazing, but Umberto Eco's book features this Mouse or Rat, features some amazing takes on the diffusion of meaning, and he talks about AI, and this is written 15, 20 years ago, this book. He talks about AI interpreting text, and the Mouse or Rat, the name of the book itself, comes from the fact of a computer interpreting a text from Hamlet back and forth between different languages, and how you can render it completely meaningless by, you know, starting off in English, translating it into Italian, then translating it into Spanish, then back into English, and it's completely lost its meaning. So it's a massive philosophical question, the nature of translation and interpretation in these ways. And I work as an interpreter occasionally within French stuff, with cinema stuff over in Paris, and sometimes you have to listen very precisely and go, okay, how can I condense this into the most effective way? And I remember one time I was working in the BFI at London, interpreting for a film philosopher guy, Alain Bergala, who talks about film education. And someone asked him a question, and his answer was, "Oui, alors, je pense que dans ma vie, plutôt, c'est comme ça, les gens qui bougent comme ça, sur la screen, l'écran, c'est un gros jeu." And he spoke for, 15 minutes. And when it came to my turn to interpret what he said, I just said, "Yes."
It's a classic yes. Translation joke.
Yes, it's very funny to my mind anyway.
I watch everything with subtitles when I'm in my house and when I'm in cinema. Yeah, everything. Netflix says, I've got a little stat here for you, that 80% of users have subtitles on as a matter of course.
Wow, why is that?
There's two of the main reasons, which I think you can sort of figure out, is hard of hearing people like your father-in-law.
Yeah.
And where English is the second language, they'll have the English playing and then the English subtitles on as well. I have it because I just don't, because people mumble to sound like an old person. These young actors these days, they mumble. And inevitably, we're going to come back to Christopher Nolan. Sometimes the mix of the film or the show that you're watching, the music's too loud. I can't hear what they're saying, Christopher.
The classic example for me is, and this is one we in our family would, if you respond to something and it's the word, the response you want to give is, of course, you respond as Bane and... in the last Batman movie, you go, of course. And it's like Tom Hardy chewing the scenery with a half a grapefruit in front of his face going, I want to change my underwear. It's like, why have you chosen to perform like that? And Christopher, why have you chosen to put him so strangely in the mix? Please stop it. And I think one of Christopher Nolan's arguments for this is to make people, to draw people in, to make them focus a bit more. I think that was one of the things. I could be wrong in saying that, but it doesn't, it's you have to seduce people in. You don't just go, ha, work your way through this, you bastards. No, it's you've got to seduce people in. And then, but the actual parameters of someone's hearing are so locked into who they are, it can take them out of things. So it's really, you want to be immersed in the experience of cinema and Mr. Nolan's very odd choices in mixings are frustrating, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't understand somebody terribly well if I can't see their lips moving.
All right, okay, gosh.
I don't think my hearing is bad. thank you.
I'm not going to have to do that.
Place hand in front of his lips. I find it really difficult, which is why one of the reasons that I hate speaking on the phone is because I just find it easier to understand. I mean, FaceTime is a
really interesting
prospect as well. I think I just don't like speaking to people on the phone. But I just don't like speaking to people. I think I might be in the wrong job. There's a very good video from, I think it's Vox, which explains why people find films, modern films, more difficult to understand than older films, basically. Why the problem of subtitles is becoming a thing. Yeah. It's a wonderful video. It's a very detailed explanation, which I won't try and summarise too much, but it's a mixture of microphone placement, because microphones can pick up everything now.
Yeah.
So you're able to have actors who say... And the microphone will pick it up, whether you can understand it or not. That's not the case. Whereas, previously you'd have... There's that wonderful, and they cite this in the video, the bit in Singing in the Rain, where she's trying to learn how to speak to the mic. Yes, and it's the microphones are hidden in plant pots, and she's sort of turning her head from one side to the other.
That really is the most amazing film. There is so much in that film that's just, oh my God, I love it. I'd watch that again in a flash.
It's one of my favourites. I think that might be my afternoon sorted.
Yeah, it's really interesting, the placement. So a lot of times, so in terms of acting technique, there's so much you can do with the placement of the voice. And Sean Connery, if, you know, is a classic example. You know, Sean's voice is very much something quite special. But actually, Sean's voice is quite low down. If I remember a friend had seen him talking at the Bayer Theatre many years ago when he went to do some sort of special presentation. And he was saying he couldn't actually hear him very well at all because he spoke so quietly. And I think that's a lot of, you know, his vocal placement, placing his voice somewhere kind of in the soft palate almost. You know, that's, it's, whereas I'm placing my voice more towards my teeth. It's a choice for, you know, the character and the interpretation. So the level of sound that's in the mix of that is a really interesting question. And I remember when when I was performing in Hong Kong many years ago, did a show about the work of Franz Kafka, and there were some really deeply intimate moments in it, and it was a very big venue. It was a huge, it was the Kowloon Performing Arts Centre down by the water there, and I remember really struggling because my background's in physical theatre rather than kind of, you know, overall kind of actor training stuff at that point. And it was how could I be intimate with my voice but at a scale that was large enough to fill the auditorium? And it's a really interesting thing to play with as an actor. And again, on film, that's something totally different as well. So it's where technical skills and performance skills marry. And then always that comes down to the point of choice. Film is a medium of choice. What do you choose and why? Everything that you see on screen is there by choice. There's no accident in film. Or if there is an accident, you choose to keep that accident in. So this is choice is the kind of core question within this. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating stuff. A few days ago, Ellen and I met in person. And we met with a very dear friend, a Mr. James Parkin. And Jim, what was Jim doing, Ellen?
Jim was at Campbelltown painting a mural for us. We commissioned him, thank you to the Arts Society and Campbelltown Community Wind Farm Trust, we commissioned him to paint a large film-based mural. And he was there for a week. And during that time, we had the school children in and they helped to paint. And it was a lovely time. And you, Alistair, came to help with the school children to sort of... crowd control in a very skilled crowd control.
Tell them to draw stuff.
Exactly. No, that's a bit more nuanced than that. But
it was really interesting, actually. They were cool. Yeah.
And they'd made some little animations. You taught them Flipper Clip.
Yeah, Faster Than Life. Yep. Yeah. Sorry, that's Flipper. Yeah. But yes. And so we got a chance to ask Jim to share some stories with us in person. And what you're about to hear is Ellen, Jim and myself sitting in screen one in Campbelltown Picture House as Jim shares some tales with us from his own life. Where are we, Ellen?
We've moved into Campbelltown Picture House. Alistair and I are together for the first time recording this. And we are joined by... Who are you?
I'm Jim.
Tell us some more about that.
Well, I am an animator, model maker, mobile artist. And I'm very excited to actually join you in person in screen one.
It's lovely to have you. You bring us a story.
Yes, I have several. It's just knowing where to start, isn't it, really? I mean, that's the great thing about cinemas. Everybody has some kind of experience of something weird happening. And, so far, it's been great listening to the different stories of people finding things or things being delivered
bits
to
bits.
You. Yes. So I suppose my first one is a very short one. My favourite cinema is one in Leamington Spa called The Regal, which was a 1,200-seater cinema. Beautiful 1930s screen, but used to flood. And in three or four times a year, the River Leam would flood its banks and the cinema, the bottom half of the cinema, would fill with fish. So you'd find trout and you'd find chub.
That's amazing.
Great word, chub, as well. Yeah, and you'd find them. So the fire doors would obviously hold back the water. And there was a proper pit. And I don't know if it was an orchestra pit originally. But, the first four or five rows of seats would just be underwater. So you'd have fish swimming around. And it just became an accepted thing in the cinema that, you know, this would flood regularly. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
When you say swish, fish swimming around, the cinema presumably was closed at this.
Oh yeah, I mean there'd always be a local newspaper piece with people with nets and buckets catching fish between the seats, and I think it really stuck with me. I just really love that image of red velvet seats covered in pooey mud, and it does explain the smell, you know, of the old fashioned cinema as well.
So, and just the just the fact that it happened every year, the sort of resignation that.
Well,
it's the yearly flood.
This unwillingness to change anything about it is so brilliant. Yeah, I thought it's great.
Absolutely.
That's not my big story. My big story is, as you say, things happening to you in the cinema and finding things. So I suppose my story is actually the opposite. Is me bringing something to a venue.
You causing trouble in a venue.
Yes. So we've had a long-term thing working in the studio with all my studio mates, and you get bored.
Yeah.
And you talk about all sorts of mad stuff. And we'd always had this joke about returning Hitler's ball to the Albert Hall. So between us, it had always been a flight of fancy. And then one day I managed to get tickets for the Teenage Cancer Trust Goldfrapp gig, and it was Goldfrapp and Anthony the Johnsons. And amazing gig, and like the gig of a lifetime. So it was on. So between us, we made a mummified testicle. Now, if you want to make a mummified testicle, nutmeg is the key, and mace gives you the vas deferens, and so you can wrap it with a bit of silicone tubing off the end. And a bit of a paint job, put it on a velveteen cushion, and they made a little gilt gold frame and a little written piece, like it was a museum piece. So it's my job to get into the Albert Hall, which I didn't really think about because we'd had a lovely day in London, come for the gig, and I forgot about security. So security looked in, saw a petrified bollock in a gold frame,
Did they immediately recognise it as a petrified bollock?
Not even raised an eyebrow.
Right.
I thought, this is over. They're going to throw me out. I spent all this money on these tickets. We had a box, so it was an expensive ticket.
God.
Nothing got scot-free. But it ruined the entire gig because I was so nervous about placing this thing. And I straddled the roll boxes. So the boxes went from mine, so I didn't get caught with it being traced back to me. So I laid the trail for someone else to get caught. And in between the curtains, I blue tacked very carefully to not cause any damage the gilt frame and the little written piece about here. and left it and thought nothing of it. Took a photo and sent. I went to the toilets and rang my friends and said, I've done it. And ruined it. My wife was very angry because I'd been nervous the whole thing and ruined the whole experience. But I'd achieved the comedy gold in our eyes. And then many years later, I drunkenly met somebody who runs the Albert Hall and asked her if she'd find anything unusual and led on. And she does have it in her office. So it'd been found by a cleaner some months later. Yeah, it'd either fallen off or it was just secreted between the curtains. You wouldn't necessarily see it. And so that was my bit of...
It's lovely.
That's
the best testicle story I've heard in a long time.
Yeah.
Well, the only publishable one, probably. So
That's fantastic. Did she say what? Did she construct any narrative for herself of what on earth this thing was doing here? Was there any?
She seemed quite matter of fact. She said,
"Happens all the time."
Yeah, just kept it. Yeah, I said, "Is this a common occurrence?"
Yeah, seven bollocks from
a series of people thinking they're very witty, but actually, yeah. A rogues
Yours
gallery.
Is the best made one.
Oh,
here, I'm
absolutely.
Sure.
We've taken real attention to detail.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jem. That was just fantastic. I really, really appreciate your time spent with us on that. So, that was much, much appreciated.
Right. Shall we wind down?
Yes. If you have any stories from the backgrounds of theatres, cinemas, churches, anything at all where you gather and meet, let's hear the stories, because it's really fab to hear and share your experience of those things. I mean, look at Jim's beautiful story of the fish. That's totally unexpected. So what are the unexpected stories from your experiences in life? We'd love to hear them. And if you were to get in contact, how would one do that, Ellen?
You would email downthebackoftheseats@gmail.com or find us on the various socials media under Down the Back of the Seats.
Thank you for listening. See you again soon. Cheers. Thank you.